good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, he didn't cut a dude.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions, you are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local and national Native news and events, and as you know, Chuzhunk, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Dega. They are. This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, it's Friday, and we got State Senator Mary Kunish on, and then later on in the show, my wife, Wendy Pilot, and talking about our sacred animals and our relatives that are with hooves and tails. Hey, Mary, we missed you last week. How did it go? And welcome to Native Roots Radio.
Thank you so much for bringing me on today again. Yes, I did miss last week. I took a day and went down to Atlanta, Georgia to join what we call the Quad Caucus. So at the state legislature, the national level, we have caucuses for the Hispanic legislators, the African American, the American Indian, and our Asian South Pacific. I am the chair of the National Council of American Indian Legislators. And so the Hispanic Caucus was holding their annual meeting and going through their priorities across the state. And they invited the other three of us to come down and address the Quad Caucus, the caucus for all the Hispanic folks, and answer questions about the priorities, the things that we're working on, and you know, the things that affect our unique legislators. And so that's where I was down in Atlanta, Georgia, and just hanging out with a lot of really, really, really cool women.
Yeah, that's awesome to collaborate in what's going on around Turtle Island with the other BIPOC people, and that must be exciting to see what people are doing, but also in one sense too, show off what you're doing too.
Yeah, it is very interesting to see the intersectionality of all of us, but also the issues that are really unique, and we are all from all over the United States. So Representative Laura Hall is from Alabama. She represents the National Black Caucus. Delegate Criselda Valderrama is the Asian South Pacific or Asian Pacific Caucus leader. And then Representative Angela Romero from Utah is the National Hispanic Caucus. And Representative Romero is the first Latina woman, first woman to be a minority leader in Utah.
Wow.
And there's a lot of things going on in Utah that I think we need to be paying attention. And a lot of it is around issues with, it just went out of my mind. equity and inclusion. Mm-hmm. And so it was fascinating to hear from those folks and hear what they're working on. It's really cool.
Yeah. And Utah is one of those states that we have to always keep an eye on. Like you said, and it sounds like there's things happening there. And again, it's great for you to be able to go to these kind of meetings and see what other nations and states are doing. And, you know, we're glad to have you back on today.
Thanks so much. I'm happy to be here.
So I don't want to really get into this right now, but I know today, Friday, that you had a Zoom, or what did you have go on?
Yeah, so we had also this afternoon, we had an online forum to talk about the some of the issues that we, each one of us, has focused on in the legislature. So I spoke about the violence against women, which, you know, we've been working really hard on here in Minnesota to address the missing and murdered Indigenous women and the violence, the high levels of violence. So the seminar is called Pushing Policy, Women United for Legislative Change. And the webinar was aimed at shedding light on really critical issues that disproportionately affect minority women. So, you know, maternal health and mortality are African-American folks, the women, are 3 to 4 times more likely to die from pregnancy-related complications, which is just, you know, compared to white women, which is just unacceptable. And so, you know, those were the sort of things that we were talking about on this panel. And it's just been really fascinating to listen and learn from these other women as well.
Again, here's more collaboration and how important that is now statewide too. So we all can support each other. And like you said, like the Women Caucus there, to be able to support what they're doing and also understanding what everyone's doing. I think that's always a really important to know it, and to be able to support, right?
100%. And Robert, you and I are that baby boomer generation that is probably the largest population, and we're all aging. And so there was a really robust discussion around caregiving and the role that women caregivers provide. You know, we're likely to work part-time or leave the workforce altogether to accommodate those when we have to care for our children, care for loved ones, the elderly. And that has a huge financial impact on women. And then, of course, the other thing we talked about is the wages. In 2020, women earned approximately 82 cents for every dollar earned by men. And so this gender gap is real. It exists. And we must continue to make efforts to make sure that that's not happening, that everybody has that equal pay and opportunity.
Yeah, and I want to remind you too, because Wendy and I are going to be experiencing this, not only, you know, taking care of our older ones, but also our young ones, our grandchildren, and how important that is too, and how much of an economic strain it can be on families.
Well, it is. And you know that usually on Fridays, those little girls aren't here right now. I have my granddaughters with me to help the ease the burden, the cost of childcare. And while I love it, you know, it's the best day of the week for me. Not everybody has family or opportunities to have somebody supplement those costs. And we're working on things at the legislature, but like everything, it costs a lot of money, and we've got to find a way to make this work for our families, especially those that are lower income, single parents. You know, it's just too much.
Right. And, you know, your children and children-in-law, they all work too. So, and it's still a struggle.
You know, it's interesting. I heard on a report yesterday that, or the other day, that it's cheaper to rent than to own a home these days here in Minnesota, in the Twin Cities especially. Yeah, it considerably. And I have one daughter that moved from St. Paul back to Northeast Minneapolis. And, you know, we're all saying, well, maybe now's the time to buy a house. And when she started looking, first of all, the selection was not there. But second of all, they the cost of a mortgage is almost $1,000 more than what she was able to rent a really actually great house large enough for her. So,
wow. That's serious news, because we know from our history is that's the opposite of how we got a house.
Mm-hmm.
It was always a struggle to get the down payment. Wow, we're here with State Senator Mary Kunish, and we're going to be right back after this short break. Oh, wow.
I heard sex trafficking happens a lot in Indian country. What is that?
Here are some of the real reasons why sex trafficking happens in Indian country. Unequal gender roles that were forced on us by colonization. Communities don't have enough resources. Silence around domestic and sexual violence. Lack of attention and justice for missing and murdered indigenous people. There's a lot of behavior that keeps our communities out of balance. These are just a few true reasons why Native communities are targeted by traffickers. When these acts of violence happen in our communities, it opens us all up for exploitation.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
As we pack away the ornaments and bid farewell to the holiday season, it's time to unwrap the gift that keeps on giving, getting protected by a COVID-19 vaccination. This is your chance to make a difference, especially as our Native communities face higher COVID numbers. Those higher numbers underscore the need for collective action. So answer the call and get vaccinated. The latest vaccines are not just authorized, but they're proven effective against the current variants. This is extra protection, even if you've already had previous vaccines, since previous vaccines will eventually wear off. Plus, the new shots are FDA approved for ages 6 months and up. A COVID vaccine is not just a shot. It's a pledge to safeguard the wisdom and stories handed down by our elders. So join the movement, get vaccinated, and make 2024 the healthiest year ever, securing a brighter future for our Native community. For more information, including details about clinics offering free vaccines, visit vaccines.gov.
This portion of this show is supported by Native American Community Development Institute, or NACD, in Minneapolis.
Hey, it is Fun Fact Friday. We'll have Wendy on soon here, but we have our State Senator Mary Kunish here, and we're talking, kind of talking about her week, and it's great to have you back on, and I know this is like really popular for people that listen to our show. They really, really like Fun Fact Friday and having State Senator Mary Kunish come on. So we have bills going on still. And yep. There's some things happening. I don't know. There's a couple of bills that you have authored. Maybe you can fill us in what's going on.
Sure. So we are getting close. I think we have 7 more weeks of the legislature officially. So we're winding up hearing the bills. Any bill that was just policy with no funding in it had to be. The deadline was last Friday. It had to be heard by last Friday. So now all the policy committees are putting together their policy bills. And then there's a matching finance committee for some of them, not all of them, but most of them. So like I'm chair of education finance. We did get our targets, which is like how much money we would have to spend on whatever committee we're in. So education, it's not anything compared to what we had last year. Last year was phenomenal. We had so much opportunity to invest in Minnesota across the state, not just in education, but housing and everything else. And so now I am hearing the last of our finance bills in the next week. And then within the next couple of weeks, we'll be putting together our finance bill where we can spend the dollars. The governor sent us over his budget. It was only around $2 million, but we have to match that up with the House. So all three of those bodies have to be in agreement. So we'll be working on putting together our finance bill and presenting it to the legislature. And then we still have to go through conferences and finish up by the end of May. So we're moving right along for sure.
Absolutely. And I know there's things happening, the state being a really big state, there's stuff happening up in the reservations up north, and maybe you can fill in and give some accurate information about what's going on with a couple bills that are being proposed.
Yeah. So a couple weeks ago, I introduced a bill to return the White Earth State Forest to White Earth. It's 100% inside of the reservation. And so the White Earth is ready and willing and hopeful to carry the responsibility, the stewardship of their of that forest. And so we have that bill. And then I introduced also for Red Lake a bill to return state-owned land. So this is really only state-owned land that is on the on Red Lake. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important to recognize that all that state-owned land on Red Lake was originally part of the original treaty. Mm-hmm. And then the federal government sliced off that portion and took it away from that tribe. And I think it's important to know, and I'm hearing all kinds of misinformation or panic, and I understand these people. I mean, really and truly, I hear you and I'm listening to them and you know, trying to be as empathetic as possible. And there's a big discussion about, will this land remove my rights to my home or my cabin? And the answer is no. Mm-hmm. Privately owned lands or homes will not be, are not part of the return to the tribes. Mm-hmm. Only the state-owned lands will be returned to Upper Red Lake. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, then there's this panic that Red Lake is going to close all the roads, which is the same thing that was said when we presented the bill for White Earth. And no, the roads will not be restricted or closed. And we heard that directly from the leadership of Red Lake. They put out a document that reiterated that. Of course, there are so many people so worried about being able to hunt and fish on that land. And again, non-Indians will be able to obtain hunting permits through Red Lake to hunt on the tribe's off-reservation restored ceded lands. When that happens, non-Indians are still going to be able to obtain permits to fish the small lakes around the Red Lake Reservation. And they're going to be free to use a portion of Upper Red Lake that's currently available for fishing and other uses. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with any of the recreational opportunities that have been going on all this time. And so, you know, there's a big panic. I can understand. Imagine the panic when the tribes lost all of those sovereign rights. And now we're seeing it coming from the other folks, but it's just really important to know that this isn't done in a vicious way. And I know there are conversations, things being said back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And like I told you earlier, it really hurts my heart to hear this and see this. And I wish people would not do that. You know, so often when I have conversations with non-Native folks up there and they start rattling off all this stuff that they're hearing. And I say, have you spoken with the tribes? Mm-hmm. Have you gone to the tribes and heard from them directly? And not one person has said that they have. And perhaps that's intimidating or you know, they don't know who to contact or they're nervous about it. But I think these conversations really have to be done. And I think one thing that's really kind of broken my heart is that this is the animosity is happening between kids as well. Mm-hmm. So it's not just the adults, the children, the youth are listening kids that have played on sports teams together, played together, lived next door to each other, hunted and fished together, are now looking at each other like, are you going to take my house? Mm-hmm. Are you going to shut down my store? And that's just not the case.
Right. I think it, what we deal with now, not only is rumors, but a lot of misinformation and people trying to stir the pot up, because the way you explained it, it's very simple. It's a government land given back. It's not private land. Those two things make total sense to me as you put it in simple terms like that. But with all these innuendos and people stirring up the pot and people not listening to each other or not asking the right questions each other, we can get into this. So I'm really glad that you're here straightening that out and bringing the truth, because that's really important. What we've always tried to do here is really speak from the truth perspective and try and stay away from rumors. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. It's, you know, I just always wonder why people jump to the worst conclusions immediately and don't reach out. I know there are people that are stoking the fires up there and want to create that, mm-hmm. that conflict for whatever reason. But, you know, we're going to do the best we can. And I also want to share that this isn't going to happen overnight. This isn't going to happen next week or by the end of session. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done, both with the White Earth land return and Red Lake. You know, there's work that has to be done through the DNR. There's work that will probably have to be done through the federal government. In a way, this starts the conversation. It doesn't end the conversation. And so I'm hoping that people will just step back for a minute, take a breath, start talking to each other in a good way, and have those assurances and the reality of not much should change by returning these lands. And these are the state-owned lands. They're not the private lands. They're not those other pieces of land. These are just the state-owned land. And I don't have the map with me, but there's a map that shows those areas, those chunks of land in yellow that the state has. And it's not the biggest portion. It's not a lot of space. So we'll see.
Yeah, and I know, like, when we talked to Bob Blake from Red Lake, Solar Bear with the Solar News, he was talking about that they had been asking for this land back for a long, long time. And I don't, before the 60s and 70s when I was around, so they've been kind of asking this because they were a little tricked into signing that treaty, because it ended up, like I think you kind of alluded to in the beginning, that that treaty was the whole lake at one time, and then when it came to signing treaties, they were kind of tricked into that portion being cut off, the northern part.
Yeah, and there are letters and documents where the chief of Red Lake at the time said, that's not what we agreed to. We don't want to give up that part of the lake. Why would we give up that part of the lake? That's not what we agreed to. So there's historical documentation of those lands, or of the chief and the tribes will not being respected and upholded. They just ignored it and said, you know, probably said, we can't give them the whole lake, give them most of the lake, but we're not giving them all the lake. And, it's important to go back in history, even though people think it's, we should only be looking forward.
No, that's awesome. And I'm glad you were here to straighten that out, because there has been conversation. Hey, we're here with State Senator Mary Kunis, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl. J&S Bean Factory is a native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Doherty Family College at the University of St. Thomas is your pathway to a bachelor's degree. Located in downtown Minneapolis, Doherty Family College offers an affordable education that includes free textbooks, a laptop, meals, career coaches, and a Metro Transit pass. As a full-time Doherty Family College student, you'll benefit from mentorship from St. Thomas faculty, along with paid internships and support from Minnesota's largest private college. Ready to turn your dreams into reality? Apply now at dfc.stthomas.edu. Doherty Family College, your journey to success starts here.
All My Relations Arts presents Okizi. Okizi means to heal, and the exhibition highlights the healing power of cultural revitalization for Native communities. Okizi showcases prints, mixed media, textiles, beadwork, digital collage, and glass sculptures by Native American and Sami artists. It explores Indigenous communities' active healing efforts through language revitalization, land back movements, and embracing traditional knowledge. Visit All My Relations Arts to experience Okizi through April 13th. More information at allmyrelationsarts.org. Life can be hard. Sometimes it feels like there's no answers, like there's no way out. Hennepin County's COPE Mobile Crisis Response is here to listen and help you find a way through whatever is going on in your life. Call 612-596-1223 for no-cost crisis support anytime, anywhere in Hennepin County. That number is 612-596-1223.
Car shopping is made super easy with Rudy Luther Toyota's Luther Direct. It's car shopping without ever leaving your home. Go to RudyLutherToyota.com and click on Luther Direct. Choose any vehicle in Rudy Luther Toyota's current inventory, either new or certified pre-owned. Then find out what kind of value you can get for your trade-in, review a payment plan you qualify for, and customize it. And then set up a time for Rudy Luther to drop off your new vehicle and pick up your trade-in. It's that simple. Your new vehicle comes to you without any of the hassle. Check out Luther Direct today at Rudy Luther. Toyota.com.
Hi, I'm Mary T, inviting you to experience our integrative Mary T Health and Wellness Center, offering physical, occupational, speech, and lymphedema therapies. Experience our guided imaging, meditation, Tibetan medicine, dry needling, massage services, including cupping and oncology massage. Sign up for our free wellness screenings and learn more at MaryTWellness.com. All major health insurance providers are accepted. Come for therapy. Experience wellness.
This portion of the show is supported by All My Relations Arts and their current gallery exhibit, Okizi, in partnership with the American Swedish Institute, now until April 13th, off of Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis.
Hey, we are back here with State Senator Mary Kunish, and we're at that point right now where we're going to ask whatever the state senator would like to talk to, now that we've grilled you for two segments.
Well, Robert, did you miss the big snowstorm?
I missed some of it. When did I come out here, Wendy? Monday.
Friday?
So I came out Monday. So it was just raining when I left, but it snowed a lot the day before or the night before. Yeah. And now you've gotten roughly like 15 and a half inches. We've been watching as we walk on the boardwalk here in Long Beach in New York.
Yeah, it was amazing. This is like the one big snowstorm that we had here in Minnesota, which is, you know, it was sort of different to have a dry, warmer winter. But it just worries me that what if this becomes the mode? And you know, we have to start thinking about how we are going to plant differently, look at how we're going to be caring for the environment differently with this warmth. I was talking with this young man who, honestly, he seems brilliant to me, from the University of Minnesota. And every state has school trust lands that the federal government endowed to the state at statehood. And the premise was to use those lands to generate income to educate students. So in Minnesota, we have timber, we have mining, we have water, we have different plots of land all over that's supposed to be generating dollars for to help pay for education. And a lot of the land, a lot of the school trust lands here in Minnesota apparently are timber. And when the DNR cuts that timber down and sells that, and the dollars go to our schools, they replant. But now this young man, you know, pointed out, like, we have to start thinking about using different timber when we're replanting our forests for school trust lands, because we're going to need, instead of the kind that are really, you know, can grow in really cold weather, we're going to have warm weather trees that we're planting. And I hadn't thought about that, but it's just sort of bizarre. But thank heavens it snowed and it rained, because we were in a serious drought.
Well, we kind of are the last 3 years, and we had all that snow last year, a record amount of snow, but then the summer there was no rain. And I always walk by the river, the Mississippi River, to see how high it is, and it's low, and it's been low for 3 years, other than the outburst of a big snowstorm, which a lot of time doesn't soak into the ground. It kind of, you know, runs off into the river. And so it's concerning. I think about when I'm walking and seeing how low it is, that maybe we should already have like a water your grass a kind of thing, where we're not watering, people aren't watering their lawns every day because of the drought, because we don't have that much extra water per se, like coming down the river, you know, here in Minnesota.
Yeah, I think we are going to have to really take a pause and look at what's happening, and really kind of rethink how we're going to do this. And I talk about the school trust lands, of course, because they're part of my jurisdiction under education finance. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be hopefully creating a task force that's looking at how we are investing the dollars and how we're using those lands the best way to generate more money, because after 200 years, it's not that much per pupil. It's only like $70 per kid. And so this is a project that I'd like to start working on at the state legislature. And make sure that we are using those lands in the best way, but, you know, the most profitable way. I hate to say profit off the land, but
right,
that's sometimes, well, you do that.
One of the things too, because just a couple of weeks ago it was 70 degrees and the trees were ready to be sapped. And I know people up north that won't do it because they want the trees to heal after this droughty winter. So again, are we going to have another season of tapping now that we've had cold weather finally in Minnesota and all this snow? I don't know.
I don't know either. Yeah.
Yeah. So those are things that smarter people than me need to wonder and think about and kind of look forward to, because I was kind of surprised about that, but I'm also, like, you know, really in touch with, wow, this weather is really, really different than, you know, just 50 years ago when I was a kid. I mean, yeah. I remember going skiing every Thanksgiving, you know, and now some winters we don't even have snow for Christmas until the new year. And then the cold weather too, because it's supposed to be like 20 below zero to kill those beetles that are eating up the trees, you know.
Oh, that's the other thing. Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's really something that we're going to have to put our minds to, but that's That was kind of exciting having that snowstorm.
Yeah.
Like one and only of our, and then the rain that came with it. So hopefully that will make a big difference with the drought.
Well, Haley, you weren't able to ski because the ski slopes were shut down prior to that, which seems to me kind of early, but maybe not.
Yeah. Well, and I was surprised too that they just had as many open days as they did. And luckily with the snow machines that they do have out there on the hills. But I know some places were looking to open bonus days after the snow fell here over the weekend. But we'll see. Unfortunately, it does look like we'll be in warmer temps again soon.
And that's not to mention, and we did talk a little bit about northern Minnesota in the last segment, but that's not to even mention our friends that are up north that have resorts that count on ice fishing. All these things that had nobody show up because there was no cover on the ice or the ice wasn't frozen enough.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing when with this weather change, how it does affect our economy. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't think, you know, it makes that big of a difference. But this summer made a huge difference for snowmobilers and snowmobile manufacturers, mm-hmm. Ski resorts, and all the
restaurants that go with them. Mm-hmm. The people that work in the restaurant, the people that count on that, not just the owners, but of course the people that they hire and work in their resorts.
Yeah.
And the ski competitions, I know they canceled a lot of our ski competitions in the Twin Cities, cross-country skiing. And I know we had some X Game event here too, and it was really hard for them to pull that off with the lack of snow.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's interesting too. And we talk about this a lot, Mary, on Native Roots Radio. And that's how a few years ago we were like in shock that water was put on the stock market. And so we have companies come up here and suck up a lot of our water out of our lakes, whether it's Lake Superior or Mille Lacs Lake, a big lake, and bring it somewhere where there's no water, and they can make our bottled water or I don't even know.
Yeah. It's water is a commodity these days.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to become more so. You know, I worry about some of these communities that where they drink only well water, and you know the aquifers are either dropping or drying up. The wells are starting to dry up, and that is, you know, a huge concern. First of all, because of some of the pollutants that are not flushed out of there because the water isn't moving along. But also the fact that what do you do when some of these communities run out of water and you know, it's not that easy to accommodate, you know, to just put a pipe through or a hose through to your neighbors and say, oh, I got water, you can take my water. But lots of things to be pondering for sure.
Yeah. And maybe some of that will be brought up in the next few years. Law-wise, and I don't know specifically what you could do right off the bat, what you could do to protect the water, but we talk about that all the time. And as you know, Native Roots Radio started as we were fighting Standing Rock because of that aquifer and the Missouri River were being, a pipeline was being put underneath there. And we all know pipelines with that cruddy oil, thick oil leak. So there's all these kind of things that are moving on around this, and it's all about, we talk about ecology here and that kind of preserving Mother Earth and Father Sky and also our relatives with fins and tails and hooves.
Yeah.
So a lot to ponder.
Lots to chat about.
Yeah, definitely.
So I was driving down Franklin Avenue the other day. Have you seen the new the Minneapolis American Indian Center lately?
Yes, I have. And that's going to be open on the 1st of May. And that'll be exciting because the parade that we have for opening Indian Month will go right into the Indian Center. So we're excited
to celebrate that and also go right into that new looking building.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. The programming and the supports that come out of that Indian Center are phenomenal. And I know that the community has really been missing not having it there. This summer, there were two opportunities for legislators to go in and tour it while it was in under construction. We were able to secure some bonding dollars, state dollars, to get them to the finish line. And I was just really, really impressed and excited, not only by the prospect of what's to come, but, you know, it was interesting talking with the construction folks there. They were very excited about the work that they were doing, too. And these were a lot of non-Native guys and very proud, very excited by this project. So I'm excited to see what they've got in place May 1st.
Yeah, me too. And it's going to be different. And like you said, it's been an entity that's been visiting in the Indian country with our urban Indians. Hey, thanks a lot, State Senator, for stopping in and filling us in what's going on in the state and in the Capitol.
My pleasure, everybody. Take care.
This is Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Hey, if you're like a lot of people, you're probably relieved that the holiday celebrations are over. But there's one thing that might stay with us from the holidays besides all those gifts, and that's COVID-19. Numbers from COVID are going up as we spend more time inside. And Native Americans are seeing even bigger case spikes. With all the indoor celebrations over the holidays, you may have unknowingly been exposed to someone with COVID-19. That's why it's important to stay vigilant. If you notice any symptoms like a fever, a tickle in the throat, or heavy fatigue, take an at-home test. They're still free and can be ordered at sayyeshometest.org. If you do test positive, you're eligible for free treatment, and no health insurance is required. Visit health.state.mn.us to connect with providers and receive your treatment. Let's make 2024 the healthiest year ever, securing a brighter future for our Native community.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Howl! Wow. Hey, Wendy, there's a lot of pressure on. We've had a great show so far. I want to introduce my awesome, beautiful wife, Wendy. Wendy's been an animal advocate for many years and co-founder and starting Native Roots Radio over 7 years ago. And I've learned so much over the years with your segments. And tell everyone where you're at and welcome.
Yes. Hey, everybody. I hope not to ruin the show. So far, so good. My name is Hanaji Hihani. That means cares for them. I was given that name by my Dega Curtis. Curtis goes by Mashke Hanajingo, which means walks on white clouds. I'm a humane policy volunteer leader for the Humane Society of the United States, and I work on animal issues at the local and state level. It's always my pleasure to do that. And we're going to be talking about a few fun things today.
Yay.
So there was a grizzly bear named Boo. B-O-O. He's very well known and well loved, and he lives at a ski resort in Golden, British Columbia, and he was filmed emerging from under the piles of snow as he woke from hibernation, and you could go on and watch the little video. It's really, really cute. So his name is Boo, B-O-O. And he's the grizzly bear from Golden, British Columbia. So check that out. It's a really cute little video. The other thing I want to mention, Robert, and I've talked about this before on the show, Robert and Haley, about wildlife overpasses that go over the highways. Mm-hmm. So yes. There's these wildlife overpasses, and they go over highways to help wildlife get from one end to the other without them getting hit by cars. And there is one right now at the 101, this is from California News, 101 freeway. It's to close overnight tonight because they're going to accommodate the workers that are building this really large wildlife overpass in Los Angeles County. So they're going to close that to work on that tonight. But these things are really wonderful because not only do they save wildlife, they save human lives too, because there's so many deaths that happen when people hit animals in the road and just cause a lot of money. But anyway, this is really great news. And they also built many underground tunnels for the animals to be able to get by safely. So the construction crews broke ground on the Southern California Wildlife Crossing in the spring of 2022, and it's expected to be completed by 2025. This is going to be a really big one. The price tag for the project, which was originally estimated to be more than $90 million. So this is a really great project. It's going to save a lot of lives. In September 2022, Governor Gavin Newsom signed legislation to require the state to identify locations where animals face barriers that separate them from moving freely and prioritize building or converting existing infrastructure to allow them to cross more safely. So I love that story, and I hope that they keep doing that, because it's really important that, we save the animals and people don't get their cars all, crashed up. Yeah. The other thing I wanted to talk about, since it's Friday and we're talking about Fun Fact Friday, I can't remember where we left off. I think it was like number 22. So I'm just kind of scrolling to get to number 22 here from last Friday. I have 101 fun facts here. Oh, here we go. Oh, this, I did mention this one, the fastest land animal. And Haley, you guessed it correctly. Could you remind our audience who the fastest land animal on the planet is?
It's the cheetah.
That's right. And the cheetah can reach speeds up to 75 miles per hour. I mean, that's crazy. If you just think about going in your car and driving 75 miles an hour, that's like so fast.
Freeway speeds.
That's crazy. That's astonishing. Baby elephants suck their trunks for comfort. Isn't that cute? Just like a little kid who sucks their thumb.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know that.
Elephants, sucks their trunk. The Nile crocodile's jaw can apply 5,000 pounds of pressure per square inch. That's the strongest bite of any animal in the world.
Oh, yep.
I want to make sure I stay away from that.
Me too.
The giant Pacific octopus has 3 hearts, 9 brains, and blue blood.
What does?
The giant Pacific octopus.
Wow.
Yeah, it has 3 hearts, 9 brains, and blue blood.
Blue
blood. Wow. Mm-hmm. Like a rich person.
Yeah. Well, be really careful with fleas, because a flea can jump distances 200 times their body length.
200?
200 times their body length. That's a pretty far jump. able to jump 10 inches vertically and up to 18 inches horizontally, making them one of the planet's best jumpers relative to their size. It's equal to a human jumping as high as the Empire State Building in New York.
Whoa.
That's crazy. That's a flea.
Yeah, that is pretty wild.
I know. Well, you know, Wanda, it's coming this time of the season here in the spring where we don't want her to get fleas or heartworm from mosquitoes.
Yeah. I just had my dog at the vet this morning, actually.
Did you?
And they were really talking and pushing all the flea and the spring tick stuff. And
I know. I have. Listen, I put it on my dog. I give her the heartworm pills, but it always kind of gives me a little anxiety just because I'm like, oh my God, this is like poison that I'm giving my dog. And I've gone back and forth with so many friends and I don't know, just talking about it. But anyway, there's a lot of natural remedies out there too. If that's what you want to go for, that's great. You know, whatever. The male seahorse goes through pregnancy and gives birth to babies.
Yes.
They're the only animal on Earth where the male carries the baby rather than the female, and that's the male seahorse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. We kind of knew that. And I've talked about this before, but this is number 29. And this seems to come up on all my fun facts. The puffer fish, we talked about that, contains toxins. And it's 12 times more deadly than cyanide to humans. And there is enough toxin in one puffer fish to kill 30 adult humans. And there is no known antidote. However, bottlenose dolphins have been known to play around with these puffer fish because they're immune to this toxin, and instead of dying from it, they get high.
And no way.
Dolphins can play around with the puffer fish and take in this toxin and get high.
Wow.
I just like hearing you say puffer fish.
Puffer fish, yeah.
Thank you.
I know. Well, they could kill us, but
oh,
the 30 of us.
The dolphins get high. Yeah. Well, we got 1 minute left here. Let's see if I could pick out a howler monkey is the loudest land animal. Its call can be heard from 3 miles away.
Howl.
A howler monkey.
How?
Yeah, there's a lot of different species of monkeys and different kinds of animals like that in the world. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Greenland sharks are the longest living vertebrates on Earth, with one individual thought to be over 400 years old, and that's the Greenland sharks.
Wow, Wendy, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for these fun facts, and wow, that really flew.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everybody have a great weekend.
Right on. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio. We'll see you Monday.
Free Leonard Peltier. Now.
Now. Yeah.